Could there be new legislation in Jacksonville that would affect local food trucks? Good morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9 and never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen to us anytime there or on iTunes. You can also stream this show live right now on our FCC Facebook page. And just ahead, food truck owners in the city say they'll fight to protect their business from further regulation. Brick and mortar restaurants have their say, too. What's this all about? We want you to get on the line right now at 549-2937. Then later, a look at the front lines of the local opioid crisis, pain rehab. Plus some weekend ideas from The Spectator, all of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, local food truck owners in downtown Jacksonville say they're ready to fight against any further regulation of their business. Tensions are rising again between the Urban Core's brick-and-mortar restaurant owners and food trucks that populate the downtown area during the lunch hour, especially at a new food truck court that's been set up. Now, the Jacksonville City Council passed an ordinance in 2014 that brokered a bit of an uneasy truce between the two camps. This is an issue, though, that cities across the country are grappling with. It raises questions about free enterprise, food culture, urban planning, and more. Lots to talk about here as we welcome Chris Brown. She heads up Jack's Truckies. Chris Brown, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, and thank you for supporting free enterprise.
Well, we are here to definitely have the conversation about this, and we want to know what all of you out there think. Do you think there needs to be further regulation of food trucks or less? This is an issue that's coming before city council at a certain point here soon, and we want your calls right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, tweets to at Melissa in Jax, or weigh in on Facebook. And so just last night, food truck owners like you, along with brick and mortar restaurant owners, went to City Hall for a meeting of the Neighborhoods Community Investments and Services Committee to talk about the regulation of food trucks. What's the position of Jack's Truckies on this whole dust up? Because local restaurant owners are starting to complain that they're losing too much business to the food trucks.
Well, our position is that we are not in any way against restaurants. We are simply providing a service that the consumers are choosing. Restaurants have a distinct advantage over food trucks. They have climate control, they have tables and seats, and they have restrooms. The thing with food trucks is you have chefs that are creating menus that you can't find just anywhere, and the choices have expanded so much that people are choosing to walk past a restaurant in order to try something different. And they want it and take it back into their offices. You can't legislate competition.
And so your argument is, look, this is the American way, free enterprise.
Yeah, absolutely.
The restaurant owners are pushing back on that and saying that some of them may actually have to go out of business since there's been so much interest in the downtown food trucks. They're asking the city council to step in. The city council did step in a few years ago and regulated the operation and the hours and the places that food trucks could set up in the city. That was something that was sort of hashed out a few years ago. Why do you think this is coming back again? Is it because of the new food truck court that's been set up on Hogan Street?
I think it absolutely could be. From that, but when a brick and mortar is saying that they're losing business, I'm asking, what are you doing to get out of your four walls? Are you delivering? Are you offering options? Are you offering, you know, changes in your menu? We're simply consumer driven.
Now, There have been published reports in recent weeks that some restaurants' revenue streams have dropped as much as 40% since the Hogan Street food truck court opened. What would you say to downtown advocates who are worried that if too many brick-and-mortar restaurants close, that that's not good for the urban core?
Well, it's also not good for the urban core to not revitalize downtown. And if you look at other cities that have really built downtowns, they have food truck courts, they have many options, they have arts markets, things like that. And we're just a part of that. And that's what we want to be.
Other cities have sort of gone through this whole arc of the battle between the food trucks and the brick and mortar restaurants, and they figured it out. It seems as though Jacksonville hasn't gotten there yet.
We haven't. It's a growth process. But if your downtown vision and you really want to promote downtown, then give people reasons to be downtown. Give them every option available.
Let's go to your calls now. As we talk about this dust up over food trucks in the city, where do you stand? 549-2937. Charles is in St. Augustine. Hey, Charles, good morning.
Hi, I was just going to say that the food trucks here in St. Augustine have been a really great addition to the restaurant scene. We have one that has like a really great chef. They've partnered together with a brick-and-mortar coffee shop, and so you can go there and eat on the premises. They have restrooms and everything in the coffee shop. You can get coffee or beer there and still have the food truck, which that is a real nice partnership. And there's another one here that where the food is probably the healthiest that you can have in town. I've gone around to a lot of the restaurants, and nobody is serving as healthy a menu as a food truck. It's a great innovation, and I really hope that the cities don't overly regulate them to try to keep them out of business.
Thanks, Charles. What does the 2014 ordinance state specifically, Chris?
Well, it's pretty in-depth, but we can't be a certain number of feet from a restaurant. So the new urban food court absolutely fits in every parameter of that legislation. And most of the restaurants that are upset were part of that legislation back in 2014. All of us were. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a consortium effort. We all gave up something, and we all got something.
And so what about the argument that this food truck court has an unfair advantage over the brick and mortar in that there are several food trucks set up together? They don't have to pay the same taxes and the same fees and so forth, lower overhead than the brick and mortar restaurants.
There is a slightly different overhead, but they pay rent for the spot every day. They pay the same taxes. We pay the same license fees. We pay the same anything. We pay larger insurance. So I don't, that whole reasoning doesn't float.
Now, City Council has reached out to the Downtown Investment Authority to create a committee to look at this.
Yes.
That's moving forward?
As far as I know, it is. They asked for emails from people that would be interested in serving on that committee, and obviously Jack's Truckies would want to.
Okay, let's go to Ryan in Ponte Vedra now. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to make a few comments. I'm going to remain anonymous. So my family owns a very large chain of restaurants in Jacksonville, or that started in Jacksonville, and that evolved through the United States. And it's a sort of shame to have interference from the developmental community trying to thwart these food trucks. The food trucks essentially are an evolving restaurant, and they're giving the consumers a choice. And to the previous speaker's point, they do offer a healthier product. I don't feel that they should be regulated until there is a true departmental health concern where people may be getting sick or risking someone's health to that. Furthermore, they are stimulating the economy because they're not buying their food from the big corporate chains such as the Sysco or G&K Foods. They're buying locally and offering the customers a healthier product. And so for that, I just think it's a shame that these brick-and-mortar buildings are not evolving and keeping up with the current times in restaurant eating.
Thanks, Ryan. Jay in St. Augustine. What do you think, Jay?
I kind of agree with both sides, but I can tell you, you know, saying that food trucks are, you know, an option for people who are, you know, let's say a chef who's just starting out. I totally agree that would be, it's a great opportunity to kind of get your foot into the market. But at the same time, we do know, you know, our family knows a lot of people who've been in the restaurant industry and who've kind of been choked out by all the regulations and the fees. I know that your speaker was saying there's, you know, not that that's not a huge difference, but, you know, I can tell you from speaking with several business owners that have had businesses or, you know, have had started restaurants that this has been an issue. I know that when you go and get your tables, even I think that there's like a per table fee that you have to pay when opening your restaurant. So I think that's a huge difference between the two, is that if you have this large overhead burden of cost that wasn't even necessarily because it's a restaurant versus a food truck, it could be because of regulation that's already been put in by the city that, you know, one person, it's kind of, you know, talking about leveling the playing field or making, you know, just based on competition versus actually looking at what, you know, what is it that we're causing restaurants to, you know, who they have to jump through.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jay. Chris.
Well, so you're saying you want to punish food trucks for choosing a different business model. You know, you cannot, in this country, thankfully, you cannot legislate competition. It doesn't work that way. You know, they chose a different business model. They went about it, and we have some of the absolute best food in the city coming from trucks.
All right, let's go to many, many comments flowing into social media. On Twitter, David, market disruption always causes people to be nervous. Would they complain as much if the Landing's still at a food court? Lee tweets the show, if places like Olio would reduce prices, they could compete. Lunch shouldn't cost $20 in downtown Jacksonville. On Facebook, Julia writes, I think the food truck court is great. I wish they'd extend their hours. The brick and mortar restaurants are too far from office tower buildings for people who only have a 30-minute lunch break. But here's one from Hillary. I don't think it's fair for the trucks to set up a food court downtown by the restaurants. Setting them there is like a small business vendor putting their pop-up store beside a Walmart or smack in the middle of the town center. And here is a question for you from Scott. He emails the show. Are food trucks being inspected the same as restaurants for health violations?
Probably more so. Every time we have a large special event and a special event permit is pulled, the food trucks get inspected. In addition to that, they get inspected twice a year. So we get inspected more than brick and mortars.
Lots of calls as we talk about this flap over food trucks. Terry in Jacksonville. Hi, Terry. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'd like to make a point that a lot of food trucks in other cities, as they get more productive and more popular, actually open brick and mortar restaurants because the demand gets so high, the owners see that there's a high profit margin there for actually opening a restaurant.
That's a good point, too. And that's already happening with a few places here, isn't it?
Yes, we've had several food trucks open up restaurants. And then on the flip side of that, we've had restaurants that have opened food trucks because they see the opportunity of growth.
Susan is downtown. Hey, Susan, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Melissa. I just wanted to say I recently moved to Jacksonville from a smaller city that went through the same battle for a couple years, and they now have a thriving food market, food truck market area that's a little away from the restaurants, but in the downtown strip in the popular area, similar to like the Hogan Street. And it's really brought business from everybody. I think more people are out and about and getting lunch. And in the end, although the business businesses dipped down their sales for the brick and mortars, they eventually built back up. I'm hoping that because I live downtown, and I'd hate to see a bunch of empty storefronts again.
Sure.
Down here. But I think that the key is what they did is they kind of tried to pick and choose who they gave licenses to restaurants that were different and unique and didn't directly compete with the same food products that were in the restaurants in the same area.
Thanks for that, Susan. And she hits upon a good point, how to achieve a balance on this so that the free enterprise is maintained, but at the same time, we don't see a situation where we have a bunch of empty storefronts. That's the last thing any urban core advocate probably wants. This is a tricky thing. This is a tricky navigation, it would seem, for the downtown advocates.
It definitely is a tricky situation, but the brick and mortars also have more hours to operate downtown.
So you see them, honestly, as being advantaged. They see you guys as being advantaged.
Exactly.
It's kind of fascinating. Let's go to, I think we have a restaurant owner on the line. Larry is downtown. Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Yeah, I could speak all day. I'm a restaurant owner downtown, and I don't think anybody wants to see the food trucks go out of business downtown. What we don't want is we don't want a block with six food trucks on that stop all the business out of the Landing, the Wells Fargo Tower, the Enterprise Tower, the AT&T building. And if you don't think that's what's happening, you have to just go over there and watch the people stream in. And the point I want to make about people liking food trucks, I think that is absolutely true. I think that most of the people who downtown like food trucks. But the problem is you, and if you're looking for the good of downtown, you can't just go by the fact that a lot of people like food trucks, and of course there are a lot more food trucks than there are brick and mortars, so you're going to get a lot more comments pro food trucks. But if you went by the popular opinion, you know, it would be a popular opinion not to pay for parking downtown, but would it be good for downtown?
Yeah, I hear you, Larry. But Larry, let me ask you as a quick follow-up. What about the argument, though, that if the culture is moving a certain way and the dollars are flowing a certain way, that's just the nature of free enterprise? That tastes change and habits change, and businesses that can't keep compete, they go under.
Well, let me tell you. Apparently, Tampa doesn't feel that way. They don't allow food trucks in the middle of the day. And Tampa's downtown is a lot better than ours. And apparently Orlando doesn't feel that way because they don't have food trucks downtown in the middle of the day. And apparently the beaches in Jacksonville don't feel that way. So, like I said, no one wants to get rid of them, but we would like to see maybe not more than one per block or a few downtown. But because there's so many people getting the food truck business, listen, there's no way to compete. There's only a certain amount of people who work downtown. Food trucks don't bring anybody to town. Nobody's coming from Mandarin Ortega to eat at a food truck.
Okay. I hear you, Larry. And Larry, what's the name of your restaurant? What's the name of your restaurant?
Desert Rider Sandwich Shop. I've been downtown for 48 years.
All right. Thanks, Larry, for that call. Okay. What about his argument, Chris, that other major Florida cities haven't allowed a food truck court in their urban core for this reason?
Well, you can pick and choose cities all day long. Austin has a super thriving food truck community, and they're there 24 hours a day. You can set up anywhere. You know, I can pick and choose all day long, and we can compare.
Robert's downtown. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. I'm just kind of stunned to hear all these comments from business owners and other interested parties who are just afraid of competition. I just feel like we're overthinking this. And for anyone that owns any type of restaurant, if you're innovative with your menu and you offer good food at a reasonable price, consumers will find you.
All right. Thanks for that call. Linda on the South Side. You're on the air, Linda.
Yes. The thing I wanted to bring is I don't work downtown, but I have meetings downtown twice a month, and I only get an hour for lunch, and the places that are downtown businesses, I love them, but their sandwich shops, there. You have to wait to get a seat. They have small venues. For the food truck court, I can walk, have six choices, get my lunch. If there's a place I can eat, I can eat. This is the free market economy that most of our Republican business owners are saying that they want for everything else. They need to let the market decide, not winners and losers. We will decide as consumers who's going to be successful in the next year. And the restaurants need to innovate a little bit more to get more clients.
All right. Thanks for that. With, I think, all points of view being heard on this, when's the next step on any kind of resolution to this? And is there going to be a bill introduced to the city council?
Well, right now they're in the planning stages of forming a committee to discuss that. And once it gets past that, there's many steps to go. It could be a year from now. The best way for listeners to affect any type of change is to email their council people. And then the direct way for them to impact is the new trucks are going to be directly impacted by any new legislation. And we're having an event May 20th at the Landing for the new trucks on the block. Come out and support. You know, get out there, spend your money. They want to serve. See what these new people are bringing to Jacksonville. We have several trucks from other cities that have moved here without city incentives. They came here, they visited here, they saw the food truck scene, they moved here. One from another country. So, you know, we're bringing business to Jacksonville.
And we'll continue to follow this. I think this is a topic our listeners are really engaged in. And so we thank you for giving us your thoughts, Chris Brown of Jack's Truckies, and lots of weighing in on social media and the phones this morning. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. Weekend events with The Spectator. But up next, how rehab specialists here on the First Coast are battling this area's opioid crisis. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, the FBI needs a new director. President Trump's decision to fire James Comey creates a whole new set of questions. What was the real reason for his dismissal? Who gets to take on one of the most important jobs in the country? And why has all of this happened now? More on the unfolding drama next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Rick Mullaney, director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University and host of Policy Matters. On this week's program, freshman Congressman John Rutherford talks healthcare, the firing of FBI Director James Comey, and his own recent health scare. A conversation with the former sheriff about the transition from law enforcement to lawmaking on the next Policy Matters, Thursday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hey gang, this is Christian McBride, back from the road. And next week, Jazz Night in America is back for a concert from French-Lebanese trumpeter Ibrahim Malouf. He blends classical Arabic music with jazz on a hacked trumpet that plays secret notes. Check it out next week on Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
And welcome back. Right now, we've got another look at a topic we feature regularly on this program, the opioid crisis. Brooks Rehabilitation is on the front lines of treating local patients with opioid addiction. and it all has to do with their pain rehab program. Dr. Virgil Whitmer is a specialist with Brooks Rehabilitation, and he joins us now. Doctor, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for the invitation.
And what are your questions for the doctor about Brooks's pain rehabilitation program, an intensive program for people struggling with opioid addiction? Give us a call at 549-2937. And so this is an intensive day treatment program, helping patients learn how to control their pain rather than being controlled by it, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
And it's a more of an interdisciplinary biopsychosocial approach than a traditional medical approach.
And how does it work? How do you help patients reduce their use of opiates?
Right. So it depends. If our patients are in really very high dosage, for example, 280 morphine equivalency units per day, the first 2 weeks are actually hospitalized, and the doctor does a slow wean while they're, you know, involved in the rehab. A lower dosage, around 80 to 100 morphine equivalency units, the doctor can reduce the opioid on an outpatient basis. But the key to the program is empowering patients to take personal responsibility for management of pain. Well, most people don't know how to do that. And that's where they get 6 hours of interdisciplinary services every day.
What all goes into that?
Right. So about 3 to 3.5 hours is physical reactivation and physical therapy. It continues to be one of the most important things that everything says that people with pain do. And the problem is, when people are in a lot of pain, guess what they don't want to do? Move and exercise. And it's actually one of the most important thing. The other components is, I'm a clinical psychologist, so cognitive behavioral therapy for alternative strategies. We have a biofeedback therapist that really teaches them how to relax, and obviously a nurse and a physician.
It's 549-2937 to connect with Dr. Virgil Whitmer of Brooks Rehabilitation on the opioid epidemic in this area and in this country. Jacksonville is no different than any other city struggling with this. It's a public health crisis.
It is.
How severe are the issues your patients are dealing with?
Fairly severe. About 60% of our patients actually come from outside of the state of Florida, because there's not a lot of programs that do what we do. So when the patients come to us, they really, pain and the opioids has taken control of their life. And my thing over all these years, I've been doing this now 30 years, is if a person legitimately has severe pain and is dependent on opioids, you can't just take away the opioids without treating the pain. Mm-hmm. And so that's the crisis that has to be dealt with, is recognizing addiction versus dependency.
And getting at the root causes of their pain can be difficult, like peeling an onion back, kind of.
Yeah. And people forget that the brain is where we understand pain. So anything going on with the brain will affect tolerance to pain, how you cope with it, how it's affecting your relationships with other people.
I used to work with a gentleman who got hooked on OxyContin because he was prescribed it for pain after surgery. And it was just such a difficult thing to watch him go through. And there are so many thousands of people struggling with this right here in our area. And when they come to you, this chronic use of opiates can lead to hideous side effects. Hyperalgesia. Mm-hmm. Algesia. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's called opioid-induced hyperalgesia. And some of the research has begun to show that, I won't say all, but a significant percentage of people on high-dose opioids over a long period of time, the receptors actually change. This is a biological process, not a psychological process. So what we think is tolerance, let's just increase the dosage, actually increases pain sensitivity.
So counterproductive.
Correct.
Let's go to Ricky on the north side now. Hi, Ricky. Good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Hey, I'm a veteran, and there's a lot of veterans that they're cutting back their pain medication because the government put out this rule about the opioids and what they're doing to certain people. I mean, but if you're in pain and you need your medication and you try physical therapy and all that, I mean, who is it to, when somebody could tell you that you are not in pain and you don't need pain medication? I don't understand that.
All right. Thanks, Ricky. What about that?
So what he's referring to is last year, the CDC came out with guidelines for prescribing opioids for people with chronic pain. And indeed, in the guidelines, it strongly discourages physicians from continuing to prescribe. And if they prescribe, they strongly recommend no more than 90 morphine equivalency units per day. And then the National Pain Strategy came out at the same time advocating the same thing. So what's happened is the CDC and the federal government are pushing this out to physicians, and that's what's happening on the back end. I would tell the veteran that at Tampa VA, they have an excellent pain rehabilitation program. I would encourage this veteran to call the Tampa VA, ask for help and treatment.
Why don't we have one here for the VA?
Good question.
Yeah, good question. You would think we would, considering all the veterans that live in our area.
I absolutely think we should.
You're an option for them, but it's not covered.
Correct.
As it might be at the VA.
Correct.
Wow. All right, Mike in South Point. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You made a mention about the difference between addiction versus dependency, and you know, we recently heard about how in some of the rural areas through the Rust Belt and whatnot that have been hit hard by unemployment, they've had huge spikes in opioid addiction and then, you know, delivering opioids to those areas. It doesn't take much to figure out that things like unemployment, depression, those kind of things affect addiction and the rates of that sort of thing. How does that impact us here, and how can we, how do you guys sort out the differences between someone who's dependent and addicted, and maybe addicted, but not really based on a pain, an issue with pain? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Great question. Fundamentally, for me, the dependency is separated into psychological dependency, and that is the belief that you need the medication to control your pain or to function. Physical dependency is if you abruptly stopped it, you would go through severe withdrawal symptoms. That happens with virtually everybody who is on opioids for over a little long period of time. Addiction, in the truest sense of DSM-5, is when essentially people do things that they know are wrongful to get the drugs. They supplement it off the streets. They purchase it, or they go to multiple doctors and don't tell the doctors they're doing that. And they run out because they're taking much more than the doctor's prescribing. That's addiction. And unfortunately, many people who start off dependent translate into addiction. That's why the CDC guideline was really developed for family practice physicians. And part of the guideline literally says, let's try to use these biopsychosocial approaches instead of going to the opioids. And it even says, if you're going to use opioids for acute pain, do your best not to give it more than 3 days. So it's a radical change, even for family practice physicians.
Wow. Matt in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Matt.
No, hello. That was fast. I was calling to see, basically, have you looked into replacing opioids with cannabis medicines or cannabis-based medicines in other states that have legalized medical cannabis. You know, just wanted to see if there was any correlation with opioid use going down and therefore the dependency on something that can kill you going down. And I'll take that off the air.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, great question. So because it just became passed, we are not currently universally using it in our pain program as an alternative to opioids. I think there's good research that there is some effectiveness for marijuana with people with pain, not only pain, but sleep disorders, anxiety, and things like that. So I think you're going to see it more prevalently prescribed in Florida now for these types of disorders.
And how can people engage with the Brooks Pain Rehab Program?
Right. One of the best things, because as I said, so many of our patients come from outside of Brooks, is we have a website, which is brooksrehab.org/pain. So the backslash pain gets you right into the website, which tells you a lot more about the program and our outcomes. And it has information, including the phone number and email to our case manager who takes the referrals.
And as you said, people coming from all over the country for this program because they might not have this option available in their state. Wow.
Correct.
Well, thanks so much for sharing it with our listeners. A lot of people out there need help with this. He's Dr. Virgil Whitmer, a specialist with Brooks Rehabilitation here in Jacksonville. Again, that's brooksrehab.org/pain. Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'll look at some ideas for your weekend right after this.
You can take my bones, you can take my blood, but not my soul.
On the next Fresh Air, Rhiannon Giddens. Her new album, Freedom Highway, includes original songs based on slave narratives. It's just been nominated for Album of the Year by the Americana Music Association. She'll perform in the studio. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
There's a power when you stand over a sea of people that are bumping, grinding, shaking, all of them waiting for you to decide the next beat. Snap Judgment proudly presents Hey DJ. Snap Judgment, cinema of sound, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, the website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2.
Welcome back. It's a nationally renowned show that features local individuals living with mental illness. This Is My Brave takes a local stage next week at Friday Musicale. Janine Hoff is founder and president of Where Is the Sunshine and joins us now along with our own Carrie Speckman. They both co-star in the show. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, Janine, let's begin with you. This is a fundraiser for your nonprofit, mm-hmm. Where Is the Sunshine, and everything you're doing to bring mental health awareness to this community. Tell me all about This Is My Brave.
Well, This Is My Brave started as a production, and it grew to a national production back in a few years ago. And it was profiled in Oprah Magazine.
Nice.
And the Washington Post. And the founder, Jennifer Marshall, she told her story. And then from there, she decided, why not have others tell their story? And she started this organization, and it goes live in D.C., LA, New York, Chicago, everywhere. And I, when I heard about it, I said, we have to have this in Jacksonville.
So you go on stage,
mm-hmm.
and you talk about your own personal journey?
My own personal story I share. I'm also emceeing the event, and Carrie's in it as well, which is very exciting.
Carrie, you're on the stage?
Yes, I am, Melissa.
And tell me what we're going to see when you appear.
I'm going to do a gymnastics routine. Now that would be funny.
Interpretive dance, perhaps?
Fortunately, I will not be singing. And I say fortunately for everybody else, but I will be doing, is it an essay, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. You share your struggle.
Yes, I do. And I will be talking about my personal story in my own way.
You know, in your own inimitable way.
Yes, I'm not going to be.
Now, let me ask, because the whole idea of this is to destigmatize mental illness.
Yes.
When you see someone up on the stage you know and love talking about this, it helps people relate much more strongly. Is that the idea?
Absolutely. What this show does is it empowers the individuals who have a mental health disorder. And this is May Mental Health Awareness Month. And The stories are positive. They show how a person can live successfully with a mental health disorder. And so there's 10 of us, plus we have a special guest, Ebony Payne English, who's going to do some spoken word.
And she just won a Cultural Council Arts Award.
I know.
She's so an incredible local talent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so she's going to share some of her stuff as well. And you hear the stories. They're all different. There's a singer. There's another spoken word artist, essay, a poetry. And it's their journey, but their journey to living with mental health disorders successfully. It's not, you're not going to go there and cry and walk out feeling totally sad and upset. You're going to walk out feeling empowered.
That's the whole idea. And it is Mental Health Awareness Month. There are so many different groups and individuals trying to work on this right here in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Your organization's one of them.
Yes.
Can you tell us about Where's the Sunshine?
So Where's the Sunshine started about a year ago after I experienced a mental health disorder, and I couldn't find people that I could connect with, people who were like me. And so I started this organization, and we focus on peer support, and we work with organizations like I Still Matter, which also won an award this week at the Mental Health America Awards, and Mind Over Music Movement, NAMI, and we work with Mental Health America, the American Suicide Foundation, and other organizations like that.
So this is coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend at a great venue.
Oh, I'll mention it again next week. Don't worry.
I know you will. I know
you. Don't you worry.
You ladies are going to be on stage at Friday Musicale next Saturday night.
As soon as I write what I'm going to say, which I haven't done
yet. Oh, you haven't written your essay yet?
Oh, I was just waiting. Yeah, Janine probably didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well,
you know how I operate.
I know how you roll, but you will meet the deadline. You
yes,
always
I will.
Meet your deadlines.
Yes, I will.
Yeah.
I'll She's be there.
The great Carrie Speckman, co-starring.
I sound like a magician.
I know.
Like the amazing Kreskin?
Yes.
She's co-starring with Janine Hoff in This Is My Brave, along with other local residents of Jacksonville. This is going to be on stage next Saturday night at Friday Musicale. People can get their tickets on Eventbrite, correct?
Yes, or 904 Tix.
Or 904 Tix. Have a great show, ladies. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Carrie, we'll be back in a moment as we take a look at some weekend events, including something special on Jekyll Island. We'll be right back.
Join WJCT for Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, June 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the WJCT studios. The day will include family-friendly activities, PBS Kids characters, food trucks, and so much more. The event is free, but reservations are required. For more information, log on to wjct.org/events.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Today's segment with Carrie Speckman is brought to you in part by Blue Bamboo Asian Kitchen.
Welcome back. Well, Jekyll Island's beautiful oceanfront, maritime forest, and flat terrain make the barrier island a runner's dream. Since 2003, Jekyll Island has hosted Turtle Crawl. It's a weekend of races to benefit the Georgia Sea Turtle Center. Nancy Kring-Rowan is with the Jekyll Island Authority. She's on the line with a preview of this big event kicking off tomorrow. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. And runners from around the world come to Jekyll Island for this, correct?
They do. It's astounding how far and how wide people come to enjoy our races here because, exactly like you said, we are a flat terrain and we are a Peachtree certified race.
Okay. What does Peachtree certified mean?
That means if the runners run in our race, then they are qualified to run into the Peachtree race in Atlanta.
Oh, gotcha. So people from around the world coming to Jekyll this weekend for two USA Triathlon sanctioned events, as well as a 5K and a 10K, so lots of opportunities to run.
Exactly. We have something for everyone. So if you're interested in doing the long haul of the international triathlon or the sprint distance, we're here for you. And then, of course, on Mother's Day, we'll have the 5 and 10K runs.
And all of this is so cool. This all benefits the Georgia Sea Turtle Center. Tell us a little bit about this. It's a working wildlife hospital with an amazing mission.
It is. Dr. Terry Norton started the hospital in 2003 with the fundraiser with the turtle crawl starting then, and then they opened their doors in 2007. We'll be celebrating their 10th anniversary this year in June. We're so excited about it. And, of course, it's all about taking care of the turtles here on Jekyll Island, and the nesting season has already started. We've already had our first nest.
Oh, how exciting. I bet the kids love seeing that, seeing those creatures. And this is something that the whole family can enjoy. It is this weekend on Jekyll Island, as you need to come out for runners from around the world taking place or being part of Turtle Crawl, a weekend of races to benefit the Georgia Sea Turtle Center. Nancy Kring-Rowan with the Jekyll Island Authority. How can people come at the last minute?
We come one, come all, please do. On Friday, we're going to have our race expo at Great Dunes Park, which will have food trucks and vendors, and it's packet pickup day for a lot of the athletes can come on out, but the general public is encouraged to attend. Saturday, the races will start at 7 a.m. Come on by. Again, the vendors and the food trucks will be out there for everyone to enjoy, and at 4:30 Saturday afternoon, we will have a turtle release for the public, so everyone wants to be out at Great Dunes Park, out on the beachfront for that one. And then Saturday night from 5 to 8 p.m. in the Jekyll Island Beach Village is a family-friendly and free festival for everyone. They'll have live music, street entertainment. You can get selfies with Scoot, which is the mascot for the Georgia Sea Turtle Center.
Excellent. Then, all right, Nancy, thanks so much for being with us. We're a little tight on time. Thanks for getting on the line with us. And that's this weekend on Jekyll Island. Meanwhile, we've got a few other ideas for your weekend. From Marlon Wayans to John Legend and more, here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the star of radio and stage and screen, Carrie Speckman is here today.
I don't know about screen.
You're now a stage star.
Well, I haven't done
as
it
we
yet.
Just learned.
I didn't do it yet.
You will be on stage next weekend in a show at Friday Musicale, but that's next weekend.
That's
what's going
next
on?
Weekend. We'll talk about it next week.
All right. What's going on this weekend?
Well, tonight we have, I haven't heard their name in a long time, it's Band X.
Punk Band.
Punk Band, yes. They are celebrating their 40th year.
Get out of
touring.
Here. Coming yes. to St. Augustine Amphitheater.
And it will be original members, Exene Cervenka, John Doe, you know, Billy Zoom, you know, the whole crew.
The whole crew who I have actually not heard of, but it'll be a great show at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. We're a little tight on time. I'm going to skip around
your rundown. Girl.
Marlon Wayans coming to the Comedy Zone of the famous Wayans family.
Of the 18 Wayans.
Yeah, they've got
brothers
a million
and
siblings.
Sisters,
yeah. I interviewed him and Damon Wayans when Scary Movie first came out.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I was still in Chicago at that time, and they were doing a big media tour. They're hilarious.
They are, and they're adorable.
Yeah.
And yeah, he'll be at the Comedy Zone tonight through Saturday.
Okay, now the Fancy Pants Party is coming up out at the Players Championship.
No, it's at Top Golf this year.
Oh, it's at Top Golf this year.
It's been at the Players, but it has now moved to Top Golf.
This is where you come out in pants that can be seen from space, like
pretty much
your loudest golf pants,
pretty much.
And this is to benefit Blessings in a Backpack.
Yes, they will have a DJ, an open bar, heavy hors d'oeuvres, and again, it's a benefit for Blessings in a Backpack.
Is that tonight?
That is Saturday.
Saturday night. Wear your fancy pants out at Top Golf. Julian and Derek Hough of Dancing with the Stars coming to the Florida Theater.
Who could be the most beautiful brother-sister combo in the history of the world?
Yeah, they're adorable.
They are. And, of course, they're from Dancing with the Stars. I think he has the most wins.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Anybody, but
over Max, like his rival Max.
Well, yeah, Max has been out of the picture for a while.
When did Max leave the show?
I kind of messed up.
I've lost track.
I know.
I'm so sorry. Okay, but that's Friday at Florida Theater.
Correct.
Friday and Saturday, it's Funkfest. Belle Biv DeVoe, I think, is coming.
Poison! I knew it.
Yep.
I knew that's what he was going to.
They're coming to town.
You know what? Take precautions. You know what, Melissa?
Never trust a big butt and a smile.
Don't do it.
All right, where's Funkfest, my friend?
Funkfest is at, they're still calling it Metropolitan Park. Is that what it's called?
Oh, they're playing next door.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Saturday, it's a Harry Potter event at Percy Weasley Francis Field.
No, Percy Weasley.
Percy Weasley. Yeah, I read those books. I should know this.
Chris Rankin, who played Percy Weasley, will be there.
Oh, that's
But it
nice.
Is at Francis Field in St. Augustine.
Menopause the Musical coming. Of course, we had Mary Wilson of the Supremes here yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I want to make quick mention of an event for the St. John's Riverkeeper. This is coming up May 13th at Rivertown Park, a festival highlighting the life of naturalist William Bartram. Wanted to mention that. And then last but not least, John Legend coming to town.
Yes.
I love John Legend.
He's already married. Sorry.
I don't love him that way.
Well, so are you.
No, I just like his music.
Ten Grammys.
I just think he's an amazing artist.
And
Ten Grammys.
His wife is very big on the Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
She's
Chrissy Teigen. And now he'll be Sunday at the St. Augustine Amphitheater.
That
so.
Is correct. Can I just give this quick quote from the New York Times? This is what they said. He treats love as something far more complex than a panacea and a fount of... Isn't it supposed to be... Yeah, a fount of perpetual reassurance with music to match. Thank you.
John Legend Sunday, and go to
thespectator.com
for the full list of weekend events.
Yes.
Is it, the site is up and running?
It is up.
All right.
It has been a pleasure.
And an inconvenience.
A minor inconvenience.
Hopefully only minor.
Minor.
All right. Carrie Speckman, always good to see
always
you.
Always a pleasure.
We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Whatever you do this weekend, get out and enjoy yourselves. We'll see you tomorrow.
All of you love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your all to me, I'll give my all to you. You're my end and my beginning, even when I lose, I'm winning. 'Cause I give you all of me, and you give me all.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.